You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering, mahoganysilvering.net.
From author Mahogany Silverrain comes the book, Tell Me You Love Me. Tell Me You Love Me is a paranormal and diverse romance novella. This is the first book in the Kenya Clark series. Breaking the laws of magic, a supernatural serial killer is unleashed on the city of Atlanta, Georgia. Special Agent Kenya Clark of the GBI Paranormal Crimes Investigation Unit has been given the case. Her partner hates anything to do with the supernatural. Kenya has a gift that allows her to see the crime through the eyes of the victim. However, in this case, she sees through the eyes of the killer. To solve the case, she must find out what her connection to the killer is. But will she and her partner be able to work together? Tell Me You Love Me from author Mahogany Silverrain is available on Amazon in both Kindle and paperback editions, as well as the author's website, mahoganysilverrain.net. Tell Me You Love Me from author Mahogany Silverrain. Order your copy today.
2 Ink Minimum, Book 1 of the Permanent Hangover Series by Michelle Prince. All Finn Gardner wanted was some fresh air when he stepped down to the alley behind the Permanent Hangover Bar and Tattoo Parlor. Instead, he found someone who needed help. His help. Bailey Parson escapes her life in Chicago to find a better one in St. Paul. Not only does she win over the customers and staff with her smart wit and empathy, she wins over Finn as well. But when Bailey's past threatens their relationship, Finn has a decision to make. Just how much of his dark past does he need to unlock to save her? 2 Ink Minimum by USA Today best-selling author Michelle Prince. Get your copy on Amazon today.
You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering. MahoganySilvering.net. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Mahogany Says Show. I am your host, Mahogany Silvering, and we have a special guest tonight, Miss Sable Hunter. I almost said Hunter first. I am so sorry. But it's a wonderful name. But yes, she is a best-selling author of, 60 books in 9 series. Is that correct?
Probably more than that by now, but that's enough.
Wow, that's a
lot. Been writing a while.
Yes, you have definitely been writing a while. Awesome. So, what's it like being on the New York Times bestseller list?
It was thrilling. The day I found out that the book had gone on the bestseller list, I didn't have anybody to tell. So I got outside the house and ran down the street just announcing it to whoever would listen. But, it was fun. It was fun. And, something that I'll never forget. And I'm just proud as peaches about. But there's so many things that make writing life wonderful, and the best one is just the people that I've met along the way. I wouldn't trade that for 3 or 4 New York Times bestseller lists.
Oh, that's great. So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from.
Okay.
And how you started writing.
I am from East Texas, and I have spent a lot of time in Louisiana. My books are all set between, I'd say, New Orleans and Austin. And I do live
my hometown.
Just outside of Austin now. And so I write a lot of cowboy. In fact, I think that's really what I'm more known for. But I probably wrote almost as many Cajun paranormal books as I have cowboy books. And I let the paranormal sort of seep into every book I write because it's so much a part of my own personal life. That I just tend to think of it as, instead of being supernatural, I think of it as super normal. And I have a wonderful family and dogs, and I write full time and from a recliner of all things. And my favorite things to do are travel to research for my writing, and I also love to ghost hunt. and cook and just be with my family when I can.
Nice.
And, I don't think that there's – I've been other things besides a writer in my life, an accountant for one, and I'll tell you that writing is a much more pleasurable occupation.
I would imagine so, yes. I've never been an accountant, but that was the one class I was not really happy with in college.
Pretty boring.
Yeah. Necessary. It's one of those necessary things that just, you know.
Right.
Like, maybe later on when I get some money, I can hire someone else to do it. But you know you have to learn it yourself, you know.
That's
so right. You are basically a Lou Texan like myself here. Because I was born in Louisiana, but I grew up in Texas. So, yeah.
Right. Really, East Texas, Southeast Texas, Central Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I've never lived in West Texas or North Texas, but everything from Beaumont all the way up to almost between the lakes around Jasper, Texas, if you've ever heard that, was north of there.
Oh, wow.
Small, tiny little town. But right now,
that's pretty far up.
Yeah, in Central Texas. And, of course, I've spent a lot of time in South Louisiana, too. And I love it all. I love the whole area. And I think it complements one another, the cooking between those two states.
Yes.
You know, you can
between those two states, yeah.
Cajun yourself
right
into oblivion. So,
yes, definitely a lot of that.
It's a spot to be from.
I know. I miss a lot of the Tex-Mex. I'm here in Georgia now, so it's not the same. Yeah.
No, but Georgia's a beautiful place. Oh, it's a gorgeous place.
It is beautiful. I will give it that, yes. So what inspired you to actually begin writing?
I was trying to teach a younger relative, he was a male, that I didn't think that he would, he's brilliant, speaker, writer. I didn't think he would ever be able to hold down a 9-to-5 job. It just wasn't in his blood. So I said, you need to write. And I said, you could set your own hours. And he said, oh, I couldn't do it. Well, this was right about the time when self-publishing became a thing. Kindle just had come out. And I said, well, let me show you. I said, let me try to do it. And I'll see if you can, and if I can do it, you can do it. And I wrote, I've always loved stories and had a ton of stories in my head, but I never was really motivated to actually write them down. And so I did. And just out of the wildest right place, right time, they started selling. And
wow.
I showed them, I said, see, you can do this. But I mean, I wasn't doing it initially for me. I was just doing it to show someone else I thought it could be done. And it was just, I just happened to be the type of book that there wasn't a whole lot of out there at that time. You know, I would build myself as an erotic romance
there you go.
At the beginning. Now, I think it's mainstream. What I called erotic then is mainstream now. I mean, they're explicit, yes, but they're tender, they're respectful. You know, it's
right.
Like how you really wish life could be, you know. They're not, you know, dirty. I never have thought of them as that. But I just thought that it was something that he would be very good at. And he has written some books since then, but that hasn't been the career path that he's chosen. But I just had a good time with it, and I'm still writing. So
nice.
It was just one of those fortunate flukes.
No, it was what you were meant to do. I look at it that way.
So. We'll look at it. That's right.
Yes, because if you're really good at something and it comes naturally, it was just meant to be. It's how I look at it.
Yeah.
So
I believe you're right.
So tell us about your first published book. What was that journey like? The very first one?
Well, I wrote some books and sent back when, you know, you had to actually mail the manuscript to New York and Silhouette Desire, Harlequin Blaze. That was what I was aiming at. And I was rejected. One of them said they, you know, called for like a second round, sending the query letter, first chapter, all that kind of stuff. But the one of them said it was too dark. I had a rape scene in it, even though it wasn't like you were in real time. It was flashback.
Right.
And another one I had said that I had wasn't centering on the two main characters enough. So I said, fine.
Hmm.
And about that time I discovered, you know, that we could do the Kindle thing. And I did that. And I had three books out and they started selling. And then I was picked up by a publisher. Because of those, you know, based on those books. And so then I took them out of indie and went with a publisher. And I stayed with the publisher for about 3 or 4 years and wrote several more books. until I learned the business. And then I figured out I could do as well on my own. And I did. I pulled everything. I let it go through the normal, you know, I started, you know, writing books for myself. And then when the book went through their contract period, I reissued them myself. And I just figured I met some good people that I could rely on for editing and covers and, you know, promo and things like that. And so I built me a little cottage industry, I guess you could say. And,
okay.
But it was a trial and error. You know, I went indie, then publishing, then I came back to indie again.
Nice.
But I wouldn't trade the experience. I learned some invaluable information from them. Did not burn bridges. In fact, I had a Kindle World later, and the one of the owners of the publishing company wrote for me. So we didn't burn bridges at all. You know,
oh, that's
it's a very
good.
amicable thing. So I was pleased with that.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you kept ties and you kept on going.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So what would you tell, for a new writer who's just starting out, what advice would you give them?
Well, publishing is wonderful. It is not the end all and be all as far as being with a publishing company that it used to be. Being indie has earned its share of respect. So I don't think there's a time in writing history where a person, a author, has more self-control or more of opportunities to control it yourself than now. If you have a talent,
right,
and if you have a story to tell, and you got, you get that story down, you can actually get in there and make things happen for yourself. So I would say, first off, write a story that's marketable. I know everybody says, well, this story is for me. It can be for you, but if you want to sell it, it's got to be something that other people want to read.
People want to read, exactly.
But once you do that, then, you can learn how to get it prepared to put up, how to publish it yourself, how to get a cover, how to get people, reliable people that can steer you and can back you up and help you learn how to promote, how to use giveaways, how to let social media be a platform for you that's productive. So the information is all out there. You can sit down and go through how to get a book published. You can indie. There's people that have written masterful books out there that you can just take and learn so much from them. But it's hard work. I won't say that it's not. You have to, but even with the publishing house, they expect you to do your part. In fact, that's one of the things they'll ask you now. What is your plan to market your book? You're going to have to market your book, whether you go with a publishing company or
publisher or not, exactly.
Right.
That is so true. Exactly. So what comes first for you? Is it the plot or the characters when you're writing?
It's a problem. I come up with something that I think is an interesting problem. For example, I had a virgin hero. Well, not that that's a problem, but it's something sort of unusual. And I paired him up with a girl who had been rejected by her husband. And so she would have some qualms, and he would have qualms. So it was sort of fun for them to have qualms together, And so I usually come up with something that the relative that I helped with his writing always says it was my disease du jour. What's the problem today? Are they blind? Are they deaf? Do they have cancer? Are they dyslexic? So I come up with something that I think I can write a story from. And then the characters come second. I have so many characters that are already created out there that I haven't written books for that I can sort of say, okay, which character would this situation fit the best? And one of the good thing about having faithful readers is I can actually post out on one of my groups, who would you like to read? Whose story would you like to read next? And they have 50 something to choose from, because every time I write a book, I create new characters, and I sometimes lay Easter eggs in there. So, there'll be something that I can pick up on later to develop a story from, so I use my readers a lot for guidance, like what should I write next? And that's always fun because they feel good about being included, and I feel good about, having some recommendations. In fact, sometimes when I'm writing and I get, I won't say lazy, but I just don't have time to go and look up something that was written back in book 32 and I'm in book 70.
True.
I'll say, okay, here's a short contest. What was Aaron's mother's maiden name? First person to tell me, get so-and-so. And I don't have to look it up because in about 5 minutes, somebody will have the answer.
Somebody had answer. Wow. Now, that's a good idea. That's pretty cool.
It's fun.
So how do you come up with the titles for the books?
Oh, titles are a fun thing. For a while, I went through a phase of Elvis songs as titles. And I have quite a few of those. And it was sort of a tribute thing. That was fact. That was when we were first going to start, and I was going to help this guy learn to write. He was an Elvis, big Elvis fan, and so I, you know, sort of would borrow from the way the movies were done. You know, as far as I'm not talking about stealing the plot, but you know, the dynamics, the rhythm, the
right.
You know, just how things, when they happen, how they happen, you know, like almost like a beat of a song. And so I did that. And then sometimes I'll have the book halfway done and I still don't have a title. And the last book that we put out, The Storm You Chase is the name of the book.
Mm-hmm.
It was a perfect storm. But I got to look at it. It was like 15 other perfect storms on Amazon. So I don't want to do that. So I tried to come up with another title. So I want it to be meaningful. I have read books where I don't understand where the title came from. It doesn't fit, you know. So I like to have a title when, you know, they're reading, go, oh, okay, this is why this is called this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense. And I don't want it to be a title that's been used and reused and reused, although you cannot copyright a title. I know that title.
True.
Titles are, you know, well used and reused, but having one that's a little bit different
Yes. Most definitely. So when did you first consider yourself a writer?
Oh, well, I think I probably considered myself a writer before I ever wrote a book. I've written plays and songs and poems.
Wow.
Some of the, you know, things that just in my everyday life, I've always been active in church. And I would be like the teenage Wednesday night teacher, and I would write them a Christmas book that actually used their personalities. And I have sung for years with bands and things like that, so I've written songs. And I've written, you know, so it wasn't something, I just had never made money from it, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
But I always considered myself a writer because I knew I could write. I don't know how valuable it was to anybody else, but it was something that I enjoyed doing and that to some degree I felt I had a little bit of talent. So when it came to this situation where I was trying to write a book, I thought, you know, it wasn't like it was an alien thing to me. Now, I did learn that there's a whole lot more involved with building a world and building, you know, a book that has the rhythm like I was talking about, and that the chapters end at a certain point, it picks up, you know, that type of thing. There is a lot of growth involved in learning how to really master the craft. Not to say that I'm a master at this point by any means, but I know more now than I did then.
Did when you began, exactly.
Right.
So you can sing as well. That's amazing. So do you sing alto or soprano?
Alto, can't you tell from this boy? Contralto, actually.
I just thought I'd ask, because sometimes they might, you know, sound like an alto, but it might be second soprano, so you never know.
Yeah, I play piano, and I've played for church. I've played for bands. I've been in gospel quartets all the way to praise teams. It's always been something more in the religious order, you know. And I've made recordings with them, so you know it's in something that I've always valued, and like I've been able to apply a lot of the things in music to writing, you know, to see how a piece is constructed. A piece of music is constructed in about the same way a book is, you know, so I find that to be something helpful in my pursuit, although I do not listen to music while I write. I can't do that at all. I'll put on the cooking channel or the news or something like that to have background noise, but listening to music while I write irritates me. So I guess it's because it was work. Music
right,
to me
because
was
it was
a job.
Yeah.
And now I'm just trying to do two jobs at one time, so, you know, I can't do that. But
wow. talk about multitasking. That's pretty cool. So you said that you write full time. So what does your writing space or your creative space look like?
It's a recliner in front of the TV.
I love it.
I write from the recliner. I'm in the family space. So if I have family in, they come in. They, you know, I don't go run hide. I can write through almost anything. I keep my dogs around me. In fact, I have a little paralyzed dachshund, and he has been with me the whole time. And he wasn't paralyzed then, but he's been paralyzed almost 2 years now. And he's been with me through every book, and he usually is sitting in the chair with me. And I have a cousin that lives with me, and she has two dogs. So, I mean, they're in and out. People are cooking. I don't try to run people out, and I don't try to go hide. I have made my writing a part of my everyday, you know, schedule. And I just do it in the middle of the house.
So, is there a certain time or
time? Yeah. Well, morning is my time. I get sleepy in the afternoon. You know, us old people.
Yeah, I do too.
We have lunch. We have to have a nap.
Yes. That's
true. I get my second wind in the evening, and I can write, you know, to 12 and 1 if I feel like that I need to. Sometimes I'll put books up for pre-order, and boy, I can get myself into a crunch then. And I'll be writing, you know, 5,000 and 8,000 words a day, you know, that type of thing. But I'm refraining from doing that right now. I have several books ongoing, but I'm trying to during the holiday season not to get myself bound down to a schedule. So I may write 3,000 words a day. I try to do that's my minimum. I try to get 3,000 words a day, and
I
8 to 11, and then I'd say maybe 6 to 10 is, you know, I can write at night whenever in front of the TV when Sabrina's The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina's on or whatever.
Oh, nice.
Watching. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can turn it out and continue on, but yet be there with them, which I enjoy. I don't like to be off in another room by myself and be shut off from the family. I want to be in the middle of it. So I've learned how to work around that.
That's pretty good. I may have to learn how to do that. Because I can write in total silence or with music, but, you know, I do like writing in that chair, though. I have a chair that, too. So we got to have one of those.
A little table on one side where you can have, you know, your drinks and your coffee and a candle that I burn. I burn an orange candle for creativity. I have my little crystal sitting there right by me to spur me on. And, you know, so I have everything, like a little nest for myself.
Nice. So what is the most difficult part about writing? It sounds like you really don't have much of a difficult part of it.
Well, sometimes I get stuck like anybody else does. I don't, not call it writer's block because I'm not going to stop writing, even if I have to go to another book. Sometimes I'll have two books going at the same time. If I get stuck on one, I'll just go work on another one. I look at it like a job. I'm not going to get up one morning and go, man, I don't feel like going to be an accountant today. I think I'll just sleep in. I'd get fired. If I don't write, the bills don't get paid. So writer's block doesn't exist in my world. I find something to write on. You know, it may be a blog. It may be, you know, like I said, one of my books. I'm rewriting a few of my books to try to tone down some of the sensuality in them. But I try to find something to do to write. So the most difficult thing for me probably is getting stuck. But like that's my fix for that is is going on to another project.
Yeah, that's true. Or thinking about something else. That's usually when I'll stop, actually pay attention to the TV for a little bit.
Yeah.
Or go for a walk or something.
Yeah, I get some of my best ideas if I take a bathroom break. You know, I mean, it's just something freeing about being in the bathroom. Oh, that's a good idea. If I can remember it from the time I get back to the chair, I'm doing good.
Well, that's pretty good. My kids were younger. It was hard to do that because you didn't get much privacy in the bathroom. They're like, Mom, they never really need you until you go in that bathroom.
Oh, yeah. They have little children. That is true. It is true.
So are you on social media? Do you have, like you said, I know you did say that you do interact with your readers a lot.
Yeah.
Is there a certain group that you interact with them on or?
Well, I have a personal page, which is under Rebecca Schaefer, and then I have an author page, which is Sable Hunter / Rebecca Schaefer, and then I have a Sable Hunter's Book World. It came about because I used to have a Kindle World, my Sable Hunter Kindle World. I guess. And that was where all the other authors that wrote with me were in there with their fans, and we had this one big group. But when the Amazon did away with the Kindle Worlds, I just kept the group and try to keep them engaged. So I got 10,000 people in there, you know, and so I'm trying to keep them engaged.
Oh, wow.
With other things. And then I have what I call Sable Hunters Tag Team. Mm-hmm. Which is my little, they used to call them street teams, but that's not really the thing that I think of anymore. Well, that when something happens, they'll support me. If I need the word spread about something, they're ready to do it. If I have an idea and want to bounce it off of them, which cover is best, you know, they're ready to tell me which one looks good and which one sucks. And then I have a series page. I'm not sure what else I have, but I have some wonderful women who have to keep me herded in the right direction, so I don't forget where I'm supposed to be at any certain time. But I also have
that's amazing. That's great.
Yeah, I'm lucky. They were all friends I made through the writing world, and over a period of time, they sort of hanging with me, they picked up on things and was able to actually become, you know, people I could give a little money to help me out. So it's so much more wonderful to have someone that works with you that sort of feels invested in what you're doing.
Yes.
Because they enjoy, you know, they've read every word I've written. They know the characters as well or better than I do. You know, in fact, I can write something and go, oh, no, you can't do that. Just look what you did back here. You know, they can pick up
they're
on
remind you
sometimes
nice.
That I don't. Yeah. So that's a wonderful thing.
That is definitely great. So writing can sometimes be emotionally draining or, you know, a successful pursuit. So how do you get in the mood, say, if you're not feeling it today, but I know you got to pay the bills, but what gets you ready?
Reading. Read something. Read a book. If I can read a few chapters that somebody else wrote, then I can go, oh, man. I can get inspired to do it. Also, I can talk to a reader sometimes, you know, that because I get letters and I can just get them and start talking with them and they can tell me something they like or dislike or whatever. And it makes me want to try harder, you know, it gives me something to work from. I have a lot of times, like you said, taking a walk, or for me, I like to ride around the neighborhood in the golf cart, you know, and have a margarita as I ride in the golf cart. And just looking at the nature, you know, because I live where I have deer in the backyard, and I feed the deer. But sometimes I can take a little trip around the neighborhood and pass 250 or 300 head of deer, and they're all big pets. And so that's something I love to do. We have fox in the neighborhood and coyotes, mm-hmm. and we have little ringtail civet cats. So, I mean, it's just being out with nature sometimes can lift your spirits up till you feel energized enough to go home and get down to business.
That is definitely, if you're listening and you're a new writer or you're thinking about becoming a writer, definitely do these things and remember them because you definitely will have those times. So what is there a lot to do before you start a story, or do you just jump right in it?
A lot of times I will jump right in to a scene that's in my head, but I have to go back and I have to build the characters. I've got to know them. And my style of writing, I always have a few building scenes, I call them, glimpses into the past, things that happened in the characters' lives that made them the person that they are today.
They are,
explain
yeah.
their actions. And so I've got to know these people. I've got to know their triggers. I've got to know what something that happened in their life that pushed them in one direction or another. And I need to know, too, just the things that they like. So I'll build a character, and I'll sit down and say, okay, 50 things about Clint. I can't even remember my last character's last name, Clint Wilder. 50 things about Clint Wilder. You know, I want to know when he was born. I got to know, you know, his brothers and sisters. And one thing about the way I write is I've got all these characters are intertwined. So I've got to remember what I wrote about another character that might affect what this character did, you know. So because I've created a world, all my series even mesh between one another. So I have to try to keep everybody straight, you know, who's related to who and who's pissed who off and, you know, that kind of thing. So that's something that
that's a lot to keep up with.
It is. I have a Bible that's been written. We call it the Bible. It's what we passed out to the authors who were going to write in my world. But I haven't finished it. I mean, I've got books that I've written that I haven't put into the Bible yet. I need to go back and do that. Just being able to know the characters first, and then I have to know where I'm going. I don't call myself a plotter 100%, and I'm not a panster 100%. I need to know where I'm going. I don't want to just get out there and wiggle around and not know what my destination is. So I will have a thin plot, but a very well-built character. And because a lot of times I have my high points, I know what's going to happen, but you got to have everyday things that happen. You know, you can't just go from high point to high point to high point. You've got to have things that weave your plot together to make things make sense along the way. And so I try to have all of those in mind as I'm writing. So I'll know, you know, when to speed up the pace, when I've got to bring in an emotional hit, you know, something that's got to happen that's almost like a climax. It's, you know, you have small climaxes along the way before you get to your really big one at the end. So it's like painting a picture. It's layers and layers of color that you have to build to the landscape, I guess you could say.
That's great. And if you are just joining us tonight, we are talking with author Sable Hunter, and she has been writing for a long time. She's got lots of books. And I would like to know, since you have this Bible or book, I would say book Bible of your characters and your worlds and your story building, what is your perfect hero or heroine?
Oh, my perfect hero is selfless. He's strong, but he's flawed. There's something that he either is insecure about, or there's something that he's done in his past that he's still having to struggle with. None of my characters are ever perfect. I like people that have mountains to climb and obstacles that they need to get past. So I don't have perfect people, but I have people that are redeemable, I guess you could say. So
yes.
I like them. I guess I've just got one sort of. If you really look back and stand way back, some of my heroes are probably all the same guy, just a different spin on them, you know, because I have an ideal man, and I write about this guy. And then the heroine, you know, in most cases, is just me in a different spin, you know, because I have to get into the story. So, you know, of course, she's always got different hair colors. She may have a different accent. She may have done different things in her life, but I need to get into her skin. So, you know, and Lord, am I flawed. So, you know, it's a flawed person that I can work with, and they usually will save one another is what it'll come down to. You know, they both need to be, they both will end up needing one another. So it's something that I write the kind of stories I like to read. I want to cry. I want it to just nearly tear me up. And then I want some humor in there, and I just want a lot of emotional high, but it's got to be something in there that will make the reader cry at some point. But that's just what I like, so that's what I write.
Nice. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people
question.
Like that.
I don't even know where I was going.
Yes,
yeah,
it
I
did.
Think so.
No, you did a great job with that.
Okay.
Most definitely. So which is your favorite of your books?
Oh, it's like asking a mother which one of their kids is the favorite.
I know, right?
I'll say it this way. There are I have favorite parts of a lot of books.
Okay.
Sometimes it's the theme. Sometimes it's the character. I have one book called My Aaliyah that I've always been a little preferential toward. And it was because I think that the whole theme behind the story of going home. Aaliyah is a strange word. It's a Jewish word about, you know, after, of course, you know, when the Jews were dispersed all over the world and they just started coming home, you know, around World War II, they always said it was my Aaliyah. I'm going home. I'm going to my Aaliyah. So I took that and let this girl be named Aaliyah. And she was, in fact, I don't know if you've ever seen, and I know you have, NCIS. Remember Ziva?
Yes.
This was a Ziva cop character. She was a very strong Mossad agent, and she got teamed up with protecting a Texas Ranger who had witnessed a cartel member killing another Texas Ranger, and so he had a hit on him, and they brought in this girl Mossad agent to protect him, and he doesn't want to be protected. He wants to be the protector, but
their antics
between each other, I enjoyed writing that book. I enjoyed the snarkiness. I enjoyed the heat. I enjoyed the history behind, the Jewish-Arab conflict in there, and then I had these macho Texas cowboys that were trying to learn how to fit into that world. And it was just a fun book to write. So I always say that's
nice.
My favorite, even though I have other favorites as probably equally well. But that one touched my heart a long time ago. I think that was probably the maybe fifth or sixth book that I ever wrote. And I'm in the 65, 66 somewhere area now. So there's been others that I've
enjoyed
too. But that's sort of special to me for several reasons.
Is it difficult to remember each of your books since you have so many?
Yeah. Oh, it is. I went back and reread. I'm going to re-release one in next week, I hope, that I wrote for somebody else's Kindle World. And I don't reread my books a lot after I write them. I'll go through it one time after I finish it just to make sure that it's what I want it to be. And then I send it to my editors. And I may not look at that book again for 10 or 15 years. Well, no, I've been writing 12 years, but 5 or 10 years. I don't look back. So the other day I reread that book and I'm going, I don't even remember writing this. This is pretty good. So no, I don't remember them. I have a tendency to lose children, but in the books, I'll have a reader come back and say, that wasn't what the baby's name was. And, I said, oh, Lord, we'll just play like they've had another one. I'll fix that when I go back. And one of them will say, well, why? So I've got so many characters, and they've all reproduced, and I lose
that's a huge tree for a family tree.
It is. I have to go back and reread portions or talk to my girls and go, what's the best way to handle this since I've written it this way, you can't go back and rewrite history as much as you'd like to sometimes. If I've written it one way in one book, I have to be true to it in the next book. So sometimes I've written myself into a corner, which is a very unpleasant place to be. And you have to work away, finding a way out of it. But I do have to refresh my memory. I do not remember them as well as most of my readers do. And that says more for their mentality than it does mine. So,
most definitely. Nice. So your current series, your new release or current release, I think it's Reno's Journey. Mm-hmm. Is that?
I have one after
that.
Okay, Reno's Journey is a historical set in 1869. It's written a series where it's these six men who fought together during the Civil War, and because they all lost homes and families, they just decided to become one another's family, and they actually moved from Tennessee to Texas and started, building a ranch together, or a town, actually, together. And I wrote one called King's Fancy, and it was a mail-order bride. It was the lead guy. His men got him a wife, which was an exciting thing for him. But Reno is the next in line that I wrote, and I wrote it as a time travel. He actually comes forward into current times, and I had the best time with that. I actually did so much research on time travel and the theories behind it, and I went to set it somewhere very close to here that has legends of probable time travel. It's called Enchanted Rock. It's out toward Fredericksburg, about 50 miles from here, and I had him, seeing an airplane for the first time, finding out about the pill that women take, the pregnancy test. He couldn't believe, says, "You actually
nice.
See on this?" And I connected them beyond time because she had been staring at his picture all of her life because her family always says, "This is the man. This is the man that saved our family." And so she fell in love with a picture of him when, as she was growing up, and never really was interested in anybody. And this is, why can't you fall in somebody that lives now that's not long dead? But he comes through So
that
was a fun book to write, and it was well received. And I don't know that I'll ever write another time travel. I've wrote one time travel. I've wrote one shifter book. I've wrote one threesome. So, you know, I'm covering my crossing the board here, but I enjoyed it. And
good.
I think that somebody could actually read it and have some idea of the possibilities of time travel, because anything I put in there as far as research was all real. I actually, you know, went out there and got, you know, Einstein's theories and made them, tried to make them all readable, but, you know, I tried to make it so a scientist could say, okay, yeah, this is something here that, you know, it's been discussed. So it was a fun book to write.
Nice, because that's actually what I was reading or trying to, you know, get. I kind of thought of Somewhere in Time. That movie is kind of, it's what it made me think of. That's one of my favorite movies, because I love that movie. And he went back. But this was interesting how he comes forward. And I was like, okay, now this sounds interesting.
And then
she
goes back with him. So they sort of, you know, I get to ride it in both time periods, which was fun.
Yes.
And them leaving clues for their her relatives that were going to be born later. You know, I mean, it's just something I enjoyed just weaving it together. It was a blast to write. And I'm going to go on to the next one. It won't be a time travel in that series. It'll be something else, but still, you know, they'll still have to deal
with
the girl. Well, she'll always
be a character. Yeah.
There.
Will they always, I mean, is it like a standalone, or are they all, they're all connected?
No, I don't. They're all connected. In fact, they're connected to some of the other series because they're ancestors to the current one.
Ah,
now.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I have to and so the next book I write in that series, they'll still be dealing with this girl from the future. So, but you know, they're all aware. They were open about it. They know, they protect her, and she protects them. She was able to save them from a flood. Actually, there is a flood that came through right where I'm living here in 1869, July, and the river, the Colorado River that runs through all the lakes here. It's not the Colorado River that goes to the Grand Canyon, but it's Texas Colorado River, was a mile wide with dead buffalo coming down it. And so I actually put that in there, and that she knew it was coming, and she was able to lead them, says, we got to get to higher ground. We got to get to higher ground on this day. You know, the flood's coming. And they listened to her, and she was able to save them. So, you know, I like to put real things in the book so people can look back and say, oh, well, that flood did actually happen. So
it happened, yeah.
That's
always good to read when you have actual things that have happened and you put it in the book and you include that in your story. I think that gives it more realness, or what's the word I'm looking for, you know, that you can really relate to it. That's the word I was looking for.
Have traveled from Scotland, Nova Scotia, all over the United States, and they come to this part of the world just to see things I've written about. And I'm not talking about, I can't take credit for it, because it's Texas and Louisiana. It's the beauty, it's the interest, it's the fabric and the flavor of the area. But I've woven it into my books where they can actually go see these places, and when they go see them, it'll match what they've read. You know, it won't
what
be like,
read. Yes.
The only thing I can't,
nice.
The only thing I can't match is the cowboys. They come looking for the cowboys, and I can't do anything.
Now we've got the modern one now. But, you know, to me, always the epitome of a Southern gentleman, I think, is a Texas. I'm sorry, somebody from Texas. I really, know I've lived in other Southern states, but Texas will always be that the cowboy to me.
Yeah.
Everywhere else is kind of iffy, but that just the hat, between the hat, the jeans, and those boots, is just, you know, because in Texas they wear it a lot. I mean, I've lived in Dallas, I've lived in Houston, I've lived in San Antonio, and they kind of pretty much approach it that same way. I just like the style that is there.
Right.
And they call everyone darling. I love that. Yeah.
Well, how many cows they have. What I've tried to really relate in my books is that not every cowboy works on a ranch. Sometimes they are a mechanic during the day, and they go home at night, and they've got 15, 20 head of cow, and they've got a horse. And but they think of themselves that way. They live that way. They wear the
exactly.
boots all the time. They go to
mm-hmm.
church in their hat and their jeans.
That's right.
And so a cowboy doesn't necessarily have to mean that you work on some big ranch and you're always doing
mm-hmm.
cattle drives. It just means that you are part of the land. And that you have, you know, you understand the wealth and the privilege of relating
yes.
to the world in that mindset of a cowboy who is honorable and works hard,
mm-hmm.
you know, that type of thing. So, I enjoy Texas for that reason.
Yes. I agree with you on that one. Most definitely. So what do you do when you're not writing?
I travel a lot for my books, even though they're all set fairly close. I go and spend the day in the area. I eat at the restaurants my characters are going to eat in. I walk the ground and I take pictures of where they're going
mm-hmm.
to be. That's one of my favorite things to do. I take the dogs. We just have a day of it, and we'll go and let's go say like for the next book I'm working on, I'm going to a place called Devil's Backbone. It's about an hour's drive from here, and I travel it. It's supposed to be haunted. I got out and walked around. We, you know, ate at the restaurants. I'm going to let my characters eat at. We stopped at the stores they're going to be. I went down to the place where I think their house is going to be, and I walked around. I took pictures of it. So I like to try to immerse myself into the story as much as I can. You know,
mm-hmm.
I can be driving around here and I've got all my characters. They live all around me. I'll pass myself. Well, so-and-so lives down that road. I wish I could go see them. They're not really there, but you know, they live down that
yeah.
road.
Yeah. Nice.
So it's interesting. Other than that, I love to cook. I have my menu scheduled out for a month at a time. And I know I love to put on crock pot cooking is my favorite. I love to get up in the morning and put supper on and just let the smell of it all day. And I ghost hunt. I love to do that. I also practice a form of New Orleans hoodoo, root work type.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always trying to catch up on my intentions that I'm working on. And I do
mm-hmm.
things for other people, you know, in the neighborhood around. They'll say, well, you know, I need something for my arthritis, or I need
mm-hmm.
something for my little child is autistic. Do you have anything that will help me? So I'll go in there and work them around, you know, some lotion, potion that they can, you know, dab on their pulse points that help a little bit. I'll give them a little mojo bag, say, put this around your neck, and I'll, you know, put some prayers on it for them. And so that's a fun thing for me to do. I enjoy that.
Oh, okay.
And the ghost hunting, I mean, I've been all over the United States. I've been to Gettysburg 10 times, and I just love to get out in the middle of the night with a camera and see if I can find proof of that love exists beyond the grave. You know, I enjoy
mm-hmm.
that. I'm not afraid of the dark. I've never had a bad experience. I've had a lot of different experiences, but none of them have ever scared me enough to not
mm-hmm.
do it. I find it all terribly fascinating, and I write about it. A lot of the things that I write about in my books are some stuff I've actually done, or things that have happened
exactly.
to me. And I just give it to the characters, you know. Cause, you know, they saw such and such at such and such place. Like there's a place near me called Dead Man's Hole, and it's a place where
mm-hmm.
they actually, during the Civil War, they threw people in there and killed them and threw them in there if they disagreed with them. And I don't even remember which side was which, to be honest with you.
Wow.
But, you know, it's a place where you can go and be there and know that 35 people died right here. And I set a scene there where somebody actually was thrown in the hole, and they, you know, actually was able to get them back out. And I met with people that actually did some ghost hunting there, and they didn't get
mm-hmm.
any Civil War soldiers or anything like that. They actually got a little girl, and she was saying, "Daddy, you promised to take me to Dairy Queen." I said, "You know, I hope that man took that little girl to Dairy Queen."
Dairy Queen.
So,
wow.
I was taking me to Dairy Queen. I was like, "Well, honey, if he didn't, you come on with me, and we'll go right now." So, but anyway.
My goodness. Well, you'd probably love Andersonville up here in Georgia. And it's a huge place where lots of soldiers on both sides were buried. So
yeah.
you would probably love
it. I bet I would.
It's,
yeah.
a, it's a prison camp that they actually had
uh-huh.
here for a lot of the soldiers during
yeah.
the Civil War. So you would probably love this area. Most definitely.
Yeah. I can
so
walk
do you,
on ground like that.
Yeah.
just feel, you know, the emotion. And it, it's never for me. I don't care which side it is. I feel I feel honored to be with them, and, you know, respect the sacrifices that they made, and think about, you know, them leaving their family. You know, you know, you can always find something that you can relate to somebody else to if you try.
Exactly.
And, you know, and so, you know, it's almost a sacred feeling to be almost like you're in a church house when you're in a place like
right.
that. So,
especially if you're very sensitive to, you know, hearing and seeing and feeling what is around you that most people can't see or even pay attention to, or other people don't notice.
Right.
But yes, and if you're sensitive to that energy, it will definitely, you can definitely tap into it.
Yeah.
So do you grow your own
members of my family?
Oh, okay. Do you grow your own herbs and things for your hoodoo?
I grow as much as I can. I have like a stinging nettle, and I'll go out and gather things, you know, out of the woods and things like that. I have juniper berries. I have, of course, the sage and a lot of like rosemary and things like that. But there's some things that I can't get my hands on, and so I'm not above buying it. You know, I will purchase it from a reputable dealer, and I keep it. And I have a little place in my living room that it used to be an entertainment center, and I've made put little shelves in it, and I have all my little jars of you know, herbs, and I have little jars of crystals and all my little oils all set up, and it looks just, and I've written about, you know, I was inspired to make that because I wrote about it for somebody, some of the other characters, and I was jealous of their little witch cabinet, so I made me my own.
Now
I can sit and just play, you know. And I don't look at it as being, some people look at it as being satanic. There's nothing satanic about this, not even remotely. I was a church person. I grew up in church, and to me, it's a complementary thing. All these things were created for our use and for our, you know, our uplifting. And to me, it's just taking a little energy here and a little energy there, and pulling down some more, and you know, putting a little prayer juice behind it, and going forth from there. So, I find that that there's not near as much evil in the world. You know, everything doesn't have to be evil. There's a lot of, you know, good can prevail on most counts.
Yes, and every evil has its purpose. So we know all things work together. So I mean, it, you know, evil does have its purpose. It does have a purpose, but yeah, good will always come out. Most definitely. So that's part of what you also put into your books as well.
Right. I have several of the books that sort of centralized to Big Easy was the one I've written, I think it was last year. And it was a Texas cowboy, went to Louisiana, was working on somebody else's ranch over there, and met a palm reader. And of course, he was just a cat, tomcat, and she looked at his palm and says, you know, you are one person I would never date.
He had a history.
But I got to use, you know, a lot of the if you come across whether it's a ingredients for a mojo bag or a little wishing spell, or if it's a recipe for an oil to help you with the, you know, your women's cycle or whatever. If I put it in there, then it's something that you could do, because I've done the research and it's something I've done. So you could actually use it as a little cookbook, you know, for things. So if I put it down there, I try to make sure that it's something that's fairly reliable. I mean, I go off into fantasy a little bit, but things like that, I try. If I give you the ingredients for something, then it's actually the ingredients for something. So, and that's a fun thing.
That's a good thing.
I have a lot of times in my contests, if I'm doing like a takeover or something, I'll give away a mojo bag. I'll say, tell me what you need, and I'll work one and mail it to you. So they always enjoy that.
So do you have a website where my listeners can look for you?
Sablehunter.com.
Nice.
It's Sablehunter.com.
Oh. My goodness. Okay. There was something popping up on my screen here. So what is the best part of your day?
The best part of my day is my morning coffee. and planning on what I'm going to write for the day. I enjoy that. I get to, I sit with my dogs and, you know, whoever, whatever family member may be around, and I have to have two cups of coffee. And then by the time I get through with that, I'm ready to dig in and start creating. But that sort of gives me a little bit of fuel for the day, and I like that peaceful time of the morning when the I won't say the sun's coming up. Sometimes the sun's already up by the time I get out, but you know, it's still that fresh. You know, I have a big back porch, and I love to sit back there and commune with the deer. Will come up, and I can throw some light bread out, and so they can have some bread to eat, and I can watch, see with how big the baby deer are getting versus the ones from last year, and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The dogs are out,
nice.
And seeing what flowers are blooming, and you know, it's just the early morning is my favorite time.
That's your favorite time
to get ready for the day.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, what is your favorite food? Difficult to choose in that area.
I love cheese. I'll eat cheese on everything, you know, cream cheese. But I also love to cook a big pot of gumbo. I can cook a good gumbo. You just want to lay down beside it and die. You know, good stuff. And I also like to cook enchiladas from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
Have to get both sides of the state line covered.
Yes.
Louisiana,
exactly. You just named two of my favorite dishes too. And every time I go to a restaurant, that's what I usually order is enchiladas. But here,
yeah.
I can't find the red tortillas, so they don't have them here in Georgia. I know, it just throws me. But yes, and usually it is expensive to make gumbo here, but I still make it. So
yeah.
I use filet.
I make chicken sausage most of the time. Oh yes,
you do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I make my own roux. I put my roux in the oven and the cast iron skillet, so I don't have to stand over it and stir the whole time. You know, I can go every 10 minutes and stir.
Yeah.
And
I never thought of
that. Yeah. It you know,
to brown your flour in the oven. That's a good idea.
I put like let's say 2 cups of flour to 1¼ cups of oil, and I mix stir it till it's mixed up just enough, and then I put it on a 350 oven, and I go in every 10 minutes until I got it, you know, to the Hershey cocoa look. I want it
color
to
that, yes.
And
we call it the swamp water color, you know. That's what we look at.
Right.
That's how my mom told me.
And you're less likely to burn it that way than you are on top of the stove.
On top of the stove, yes. Because I still do that. I still stand up there, and I mean, it's just, but I love doing it. So I only do it once a year during the holidays.
Yeah.
Christmas.
Yeah.
So,
oh, that's
it. Yeah. Any other time I might do a quick cheat one, you know, like a little box in the store.
Yeah.
But for Christmas, that's when I actually make my roux.
Oh, so. It's a part of your ritual. That's a wonderful thing.
I think that's what that is. Definitely. Well, I have enjoyed having you on here and finding more about your life and your writing and what inspires you to write and your books. Is there anything else you would like to leave my listeners with about you and your...
I try to write books that will leave an impression on the reader and will uplift them in some way. I want you to feel better to reading my work than you did before you started, because I pour all my love into it, and I write for my readers. And I mean, I write the books I like, but all of the emotion and the energy that I pour into them, you know, is trying to connect in some way to people out there. Because most of these people, I'll never have the privilege of meeting them. I'll never be able to be face-to-face friends. But if they've read my work, then they've been able to see a little piece of me, because I put myself into everything I write. And so it's like, that's my gift. You know, that's, they may pay $4 for the book, but I'm sending them about a $50 of emotions along with it or more. So that's my way of connecting, and I want the readers to know that, because you won't come away empty from what I write. I don't believe. I tried to give you something that will make you feel better about life than you did before you started reading it.
Nice. That is definitely awesome. So thank you so much for coming on tonight, and I hope you all have enjoyed listening to us show this evening. And I would love to have you come back when you have another book that you would like to have out, which for a new series. I know you've got nine series, but you know, I'm going to have to crack open a few of them. But definitely is one I'm liking so far, so I really, I enjoy it.
It was
I am definitely enjoying this
Mahogany.
Book.
You are a wonderful lady, and I enjoyed every minute of
it. It's great to meet another – so someone that comes from the same area I do.
Yes. Things in common. That's good.
Yes. So I know when you say gumbo, you say roux, I know what, you know, we know what we're talking
you know what
about.
Talking
people
about.
Say it. They're like, what's a roux?
Oh, my. They're missing out.
Yes. So thank you all for listening tonight. I hope you have a wonderful evening, and I wish you blessings, peace, and love.
You have been listening to Mahogany Says with Mahogany Silverain at mahoganysilverain.net. Thank you and good night.